Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
USDA released a 90.5 million acre corn crop estimate the last Friday in March, and December futures managed to post a gain after the first full week of trade. Maybe the bull's not dead. We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with meteorologist Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago. And we should have Emerson Nafziger in studio with us as well, as long as he joins us here momentarily. He's making his way over from the south end of campus to talk just a little bit about the impact that cold weather might have on soft red winter wheat. Our panelists in studio today are Chris Quorum of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, Greg Johnson of the Andersons out of Champaign, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Okay, the first question, pretty short. It's easy, I guess. Wayne, is the corn bull dead?
No, he's been shot. He's been wounded, but I don't think he's dead. He still tried to charge out a little bit today with the help of the wheat. He made a crutch out of wheat.
Greg Johnson?
No, we've got a long ways to go. Haven't planted very much corn even, and the true market will come in the summer. So, no, the bull's not dead yet.
And Chris Quorum.
I totally believe, I would agree with these guys, and I believe that we're going to hit highs above the above what we have on the report the first time. So
let's talk about the numbers as they came out of Chicago on this week. We'll go through the corn and wheat numbers. May futures in the wheat pit, a 450 high this week, a low at 412. Their settlement price at $4.45. They were up 7 cents from last week. July futures were up 4 and 3 quarters at 458 and a half. Corn futures had a high of 367 and a half in the nearby May, the low at 343. May your lead option off 8 and a half cents week this week at $3.66. December futures, a new lead at December futures at 386 and 3 quarters. They managed a 3 and a quarter cent gain for the week. Now, obviously on the technical side of this market, a head and shoulders top has been put into place. The question is whether or not this will hold as a top for the corn market, and maybe more importantly, how farmers should react. Do they plant fewer acres of corn? Well, pull the trigger on more new? Well, you could go in. I've got a couple of options. How should they react? Go ahead.
Well, I think that, number one, we're looking at a very cold, wet climate out there right now, Todd, and I think that a lot of farmers are going to be looking at a couple things. Number one, when am I going to get in the field and what my planting date going to be to keep up with the corn that has forecast the plant? You know, we're seeing a lot of corn in the Mid-South that's up and growing and will probably get froze down this weekend. So a lot of things happening. The spread has went out. It's over like a 2.2 to 1 now on the beans compared to the corn. And if it gets later, we're going to see some shifting. Yes.
Okay, Greg, so should they do a couple of different things? How do they react? Do they plant fewer acres of corn? Do they pull the trigger on more new crop bushels at these levels or potentially a combination of the two? Or did they just sit on the sidelines, deploy some kind of other strategy? What have you heard farmers wanting to do, and what have you discussed with them that are good things to do?
I think if you look at the farmers in the western Corn Belt, Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, they got a lot of fall field work done last year. They got their inputs locked in. I think that even though the corn market has sold off, you won't see acres drop very much out of those four states, and those are your four biggest states. Now, some of your peripheral states, your Dakotas, your Delta, your eastern Corn Belt, they didn't get the input cost locked in. And the bean prices rallied, as Wayne said, that ratio is a lot more favorable to beans now. So in those areas, it wouldn't surprise me to see a few more beans go back in those areas.
And Chris, your strategies?
Well, I think there's quite a bit of talk I've heard today of some of these damaged wheat areas moving into soybeans. I don't think that'll happen at all. I think it'll go to corn because I think the dollars are still in corn. I talked to a lot of people when I was out selling crop insurance this year that kind of wish they could tear their wheat up and plant more corn because the especially if they have it protected with insurance, it's still the crop to be planted.
Okay, Wayne, you and Paul Cooley this week seem to think that there might be a million fewer acres of corn because of the big drop in the corn market. Is this just hopeful thinking? And are you encouraging your clients not to change their planting mix in hopes of taking advantage of a million-acre switch rally in June?
Well, I think that the decisions have been made by most of my clients. They're going to be looking at the date on the calendar. They'd said this 2 months ago. They said it a month ago, and they're saying it's yet today. They're going to plant corn until May 10th, and after that time period, they'll look and see where they're at along with their planting. But they won't. They will continue. They will switch a little more in their flexible fields to beans after that time period.
So let's talk a bit about the USDA ending stocks report, which is due out on Tuesday or April the 10th. In March, the department projected the current marketing year ending stocks at 752 million. The trade guesses this month seem to point to a slowdown in usage, jumping the stocks number by 87 million bushels to 839 on their estimates for the Tuesday report. So where is that slowdown? And will the drop from the highs put the market back into a higher usage gear, do you think?
I think so. I think there were a lot of ethanol plants that are on the drawing board, and they haven't gone forward yet for whatever reason. I think this sell-off in the corn market is going to enable a lot of these plants that want to go ahead to lock in production use, and I think that will keep the demand strong. But you have to remember, too, that high prices the best cure for high prices is high prices. I mean, South America is exporting corn right now, and that's pressuring the basis for cash corn, and that is keeping exports somewhat limited. So, we are seeing a slowdown in demand, but I think ethanol, as long as the government doesn't pull the rug out from anything and change any policies, I think the ethanol demand will stay strong.
Chris, when you take a look at the wheat market from this week, we have seen it jump pretty dramatically, I suppose, up not dramatically, but 7 cents up four and three quarters in the July. But there's a lot of cold yet to come. Can it take the lead? And if it does, will that pull corn up with it?
I think corn's going to take care of itself eventually. I guess I'm kind of surprised. I was kind of surprised how quickly we jumped to a weather market on the wheat. And I know we're looking at some really cold weather. We had a lot of corn put in the ground today over south of Springfield and in southern Illinois. And so I think as far as wheat's concerned, I don't think we'll have the problems that we think we will. I think wheat will be fine.
You think the wheat crop will be okay? And if that's the case, then you don't see a continuation of wheat wanting to trade higher? And what happens to the corn market in that case?
Well, I think the corn market is definitely going to see more highs. I think there's been some talk of switching, feeding more corn. I think that wheat is definitely a commodity that I think we're going to see as high as it's going to be. I think we're going to see some down market on wheat.
Tell me, as you look out into June, July, maybe August, how is it that you see the cash side of the corn market for old crop developing? Will there be a shortage at some point once we get to that end of the season, and might that provide an opportunity for producers?
I don't think so. We've talked about this before, back when July corn was trading at a 30-cent inverse to December, why that was. The only reason we could come up with was that the funds just have a tendency to buy the nearby. In fact, some of them are required to buy nearby. They call that speculation if they buy December corn instead of July. So according to their charter, they have to buy nearby corn. But really, we're not running out of old crop corn. Like I said, there's competition coming out of South America. Exports are okay, but they're not robust. There's still piles on the ground. The carries back in the market, that July 30-cent inverse from July to Dec is now at an 8-cent carry, and it'll probably get a little bit wider yet. So we're not going to run out of old crop corn.
So we're a Thursday afternoon, not quite a full week after the release of the USDA report that really surprised the market, put a 15% increase in acreage on the corn. Bottom line it for me. What's changed in the week since the report? I mean, there was the surprise. There was a big drop in the marketplace. Is there anything new and different this week other than the cold weather in the wheat market? Has it given you hope that there might be an upturn in the corn market, or are we just being hopeful because we want to be hopeful?
Well, we want to be hopeful, Todd. That's the foremost, number one. But number two, what it has done, it allowed some of these ethanol plants that were maybe shaky on continuing their production to be built, to actually lock in some prices or to put things back in a profitable mode. It allowed us to make some sales probably to people that wanted to. It allowed some livestock producers to lock in some corn. We did not see great liquidation out of the funds, but we did see stabilization by end users coming in after the second day when it's down 20 cents, coming in being buyers here. So, you know, the bad news is the price went down. The good news is the price went down because that allowed us to probably continue our expansion of ethanol plants at the rate that it's scheduled in to keep using the corn. It allowed some of our livestock producers to stay profitable, and it allowed us to sort of set back and give some of our producers a chance to buy some calls in case we do have some weather problems along the line, Todd. So all those things, you know, add up to a little bit of positiveness.
Hey, Todd, can I be the first one to mention La Nina? Since the last 2 weeks, all we've talked about is the production report and the acreage report. The forecasters are still in this camp that we're switching from an El Nino period transitioning into a La Nina period, and what that means is anybody's guess, but there are some historical studies out there that would say that we're not done yet. So I think that's probably one reason why I would say this thing's not over yet.
So the silver lining remains the two things that have been out there the whole time, which is ethanol production and potential weather problems for the coming growing season. And those will offer opportunities for producers to take advantage of at least price hikes, if not permanent price moves higher, depending on whether you want to call 350 corn, 370 corn, a permanent hike higher. What do you think?
Todd, I think that we kind of put a little study together on the 12 million increase in acres, and 56 or 5 million, 5.5 million of that's coming out of the Corn Belt states. So I think as far as the trend yield, I think that'll help keep the trend yield up. I know there's been a lot of talk like, I think it was Arkansas or somebody was having a 295% increase in corn acres. But if you really look at it, you know, all of the corn is still coming out of the six largest Corn Belt states. And so, therefore, if you look at the three-year average, the three-year average is 163.7 out of those six states for a yield. I think that'll help keep our trend yield up. So as far as part of my answering your question of are we going to run out of corn, I don't believe so.
Let's take a look at the soybean market for the week. May futures, a high this week at 787, a low at 751 and a quarter. They were off just 0.75 cents at $7.60. November beans at 804 3/4 were off 0.25 cents for the week. The May oats, by the way, at 276 1/2, finished the week unchanged. Let's talk about the bean market. Will there be more bean acres in the next month than people were projecting on March 30th, do you think?
Yeah, I do, Todd. No, I don't know that it's going to be a dramatic change. It might only be 1 million acres, but I think that we will see some changes there. A couple reasons. I think, fertilizer prices have jumped dramatically. If they have not locked in costs and have not put them on, for their marginal acres, that last field they're deciding on could easily go to beans because of cost, because of time of planting, and a few things along the way like that. I think that one of the things we have to look at is here we talked to some of our customers in Arkansas and Kentucky and like that. They're very scared of the weather this weekend because of the way their wheat is at, and that could be more corn or more bean acres, so we might not have less. It might be coming out of the wheat.
Greg, we've heard a lot less, it seems to me, this year, or talked about it a lot less, maybe simply because we're getting more used to it, about the Brazilian bean crop coming into the marketplace. Their harvest has moved along. I don't know whether it's more rapidly than it has usually or not, but it seems that this would be the time frame that we'd start to be feeling some of that pressure on the market rather than earlier in the year. But it doesn't look like that's come yet. What does the trade say about the Brazilian soybean crop making its way into the marketplace?
Well, you're looking at wide spreads, huge carries, poor basis levels. So they are anticipating and seeing to some extent already demand being supplied out of the South American crop. the one thing is Argentina got some 15 to 20 inch rains in the past 10 days, 15 days. That's going to hurt a little bit of Argentina's crop, but by and large, Brazil's in good shape, and the South American crop is going to be a record crop. So if we're looking for a rally based on, you know, South American delays or reductions, that's not where it's going to be. It's going to be the rally in beans is going to be the same reason why we had a rally in corn. The market is looking ahead to a year down the road when the biodiesel demand picks up and we need to buy acres in 08.
You know, when we're sitting at levels like we are with both the corn and the soybeans, Dease corn at 386 and three quarters on Thursday afternoon, the Nove beans at 804 and three quarters, how much more hopeful can you get in the marketplace than that, given current conditions and projected supplies?
Well, I think with the largest carryout in history of soybeans, I think for the market to be where it's at, it's just incredible. I think beans are a follower myself. I think they're following corn and wheat. I believe that some of the talk we've had this week about some of those, you know, with weather and some of those acres of may fall out of corn and go back to beans has, you know, I think we've seen the market react to that. I think that's why beans struggled here the last couple of days. So I definitely think beans is a follower, and I think corn's still leading the way.
Taking a look at the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange, the cattle finished like this. Live cattle, April contract, $100.80 on the high, the low at $97.85. April live cattle settled $2.85 higher at $100.45. The April feeders at $111. 12.5 were up to 37.5 from last week. April lean hogs at $65.80 on the high, the low at $64.10. They settled $65.17.5, up $1.32.5. And the main bellies were off 35 cents at $100.05 for the week.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at WILL.UIUC.EDU.
You're listening to Commodity Week. I'm AM 580's Todd Gleason from U of I Extension. We have a couple of guests that will join us this afternoon to take a look at what's been happening in the world of wheat production. Mark Russo is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Mark.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Thanks for being on the show with us this afternoon. And Emerson Nafziger is with us. He's an extension agronomist from the University of Illinois. Emerson, thanks for being with us today.
Good afternoon.
Mark, tell us about the weather and the cold snap that we'll probably have, or will have, I suppose, over the next several days here in the Midwest. In particular, we're interested in the soft red winter wheat areas. How deep, how low, how long will it happen?
Well, certainly this late-season Arctic air mass that has come into the nation's midsection and, in fact, encompassing much of the central and eastern U.S. is very impressive. In fact, this is one of the coldest early April air masses that we've seen here at this time of year during the past 10 years. What we expect here is that the coldest morning specifically for the Midwest soft winter wheat belt, and you can extend that down into the Delta as well, that will be Sunday and on into Monday morning. So it looks like around a two-day event. What we expect specifically is for temperatures to drop down into the 20s across much of the Midwest soft red belt. In particular, the threshold temperature that we are most, at least closest looking at here, since it is our perception that you do have some at least jointing wheat across sections of the southern Midwest, is that the 24-degree line, which we expect to drop down into around the Missouri Boot Heel, down into basically the Ohio River Valley. So for any kind of, that's where we expect your 24 temperature line to be, or in other words, temperatures to drop down to or below 24 degrees for at least 2 hours. coming up on Sunday on into Monday. Further south, looking at the freezing line, we expect that to drop down actually through around central, even south central Arkansas, all the way down into northern Missouri. And for this time of year, those temperatures are exceptionally cold. In fact, they're around 20 degrees below average for this time of year. And so certainly this cold coming in is very impressive, and at least based on the stage of the crop, at least what Emerson will discuss here shortly, is that at least there are some areas at risk for reaching those threshold temperatures for possible damage.
Emerson, what do you see in terms of the potential risk for the crop at this point, given that 24-degree mark that probably will spread across the bulk of the soft red winter wheat growing region?
There's going to be a lot of difference based on how large the crop is. I had a call today that someone said that some growers had been aggressive last fall and planted early in southern Illinois, and they're going to really pay for that, I'm afraid, this time. It is going to be field-to-field like that. Some that where it's a little bit later isn't quite as large as could escape some of this injury. But 20 degrees, if it gets down to that, that's awfully cold on the wheat crop after it started to grow. The slowdown in the drop in temperatures is now taking place over a couple of days. That's actually going to help some because the plant will acclimate a little bit to that. So we're still cautiously optimistic that we're not just going to have widespread death and devastation of the wheat crop. I think the northern part of the state has its own problems, and temperature isn't the main one with the wheat crop there. But in southern Illinois, we're going to have quite a bit of leaf damage. Whether or not we damage that growing point, that head that's developing, is going to be entirely dependent on what stage the crop is in. I looked back, and we have had temperatures this time of April as low as 20 degrees without doing a lot of damage to the crop, but the crop hasn't always been this far along at this point in time.
So do we know how far along the bulk of the southern Illinois crop is? Is it a lot of it in the jointed stage at this point?
Well, certainly jointing isn't a very exact term, but I consider that to be basically upright growth, and we're almost there here in the central part of the state. So most of the southern Illinois wheat would certainly be called jointed. That means, roughly speaking, it's more than a foot tall, and some of it's 18 inches or even taller than that. So that's the crop that we look to having the most problem as these cold temperatures move in.
And how long will it take before we know how much damage has truly been done?
In the worst cases, it's going to be pretty quick. We expect that we might outright kill some of the larger plants, and they'll just be lying over the next day. And tomorrow morning might even show some of that. But it's going to take a little bit. I suggest that people wait till you see some green there, much like we do for corn when it's damaged, and then go out and do an assessment, see if the head is still alive. But even if the head is alive, that doesn't mean without as much leaf area as it should have, the crop could still suffer some yield loss. And, of course, that's not what we'd like with this crop.
Let's move away from wheat just for a second. Tell me about corn planting in the state. How far along are we or have we been normally, if we have a normal, in the last few years? And where are we today?
We've gotten accustomed to starting the first week of April, and some people have decided that's their right, I guess. Not very much of that's happening this year. There have been some areas of southern Illinois that have had some planting done, perhaps some in western Illinois as well, where the rainfall has been spotty, and so there are some places that have been missed. I don't think it would register as 1% yet on the next estimate that comes out. It really just hasn't gotten going to speak of in any area.
Mark, could you tell us a little bit about the hard red winter wheat areas and what kind of expectations you might have for cold weather and how deep it will dive into Oklahoma, Texas, Kansas, and those areas?
Well, certainly, Todd, the hard red winter wheat belt of the plains is not going to be spared from this cold weather as well. And so, in fact, we expect at least the coldest mornings here coming up to be Saturday and on into Sunday, so around one day earlier for the plains crop, and we expect minimum temperatures here to drop to 24 degrees or below for at least a couple of hours as far south as southern Kansas, with the freezing line down to around the northern portion of the Texas Panhandle on through central Oklahoma. So a good chunk there of the hard red winter wheat belt is going to be below freezing coming up these mornings. But I guess the coldest areas and the areas, I guess, most at risk based on the estimated stage of the crop there across the hard red winter wheat belt is across Kansas.
And Mark, as Emerson alluded to, farmers are nervous that they don't have corn in the ground already after the last few years. What's the 10-day, 15-day outlook look like? Are we going to get corn planted in April, or is this wet period going to continue for an extended period of time?
Well, the way that we stand right now, at least from now into the early portion of next week, it's dry across the entire Midwest. Now, albeit it is exceptionally cold here, but very little precip here from now through Tuesday of next week. And that's really the time frame, the middle portion of next week, when we do expect rains to return more in earnest to the Midwest. And they will be starting across the Western Belt late on Tuesday, and that will continue to work its way eastward on into Wednesday. The way it looks right now is that with that first system, it looks to be more of a fast mover rather than bogged down across the belt. So, yes, it looks like somewhat of a widespread producer, but we don't expect any kind of real heavy amounts here. Beyond that, we do expect another system late in that following weekend. So it looks like the pattern starting next week with that first system is about a system moving through about every 3 to 4 days or so. And right now, none of them look terribly heavy across the belt. So you can kind of look at it different ways. Number one, we don't see any kind of extended stretches of totally dry weather across the Midwest. On the other hand, we don't see any kind of extended stretches of wet weather across the Midwest. Rather, it's a period where you have 2 days or so of rain followed by about 3-4 days of dry weather. It's going to come down to the specific areas, how much do they get, and then if they're able to dry out in between rain systems.
Looking ahead, we've all been talking or have heard talk of La Nina coming in and a dry summer. Where is it at in your book?
Well, right now, from an equatorial sea surface temperature standpoint, we are at dead-on neutral levels. So we've gotten totally out of this El Nino, which was in place early in the winter. We are now back up to more neutral levels, or actually back down to more neutral levels. But what we're seeing right now is kind of a renewed cooling of sea surface temperatures. After a rapid decrease of sea surface temperatures throughout the second half of December, January on into February, we saw a leveling off during March. But now, as we've moved into April, we've seen SSTs begin to decline. And with that, with the expectations here of that continuing, it certainly looks like we will get into a La Nina environment in the Pacific Ocean by around May, or at least the middle to latter portion of May, as we begin the summer season here. Now, what does that mean here from a temperature and precipitation standpoint?
You've got 10 seconds.
Well, it comes down to many, many factors, and really it comes down to the strength of La Nina. I guess if you want to look at it, the greatest risk is if you have a very, very strong La Nina across the Pacific Ocean. And right now, nothing really is going towards an extreme La Nina event.
Thanks much, Mark. Mark Russo is with Chesapeake Energy. Our guest, Emerson Nafziger, with University of Illinois Extension, with us as well, along with panelist Greg Johnson of the Andersons, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, and Chris Corum of Strategic Farm Marketing. That wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.